There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 573, May 10th, 2012. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the donation button. Donate and get mentioned on the show. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, McLaren agrees with Barbara Streisand and goes with a new high ugly nose. Schumacher says Pirellis are like driving on egg yolks. And Gilles Villeneuve taken away 30 years ago. Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi coming right up. And special interview with British F3 driver Felix Sorelis. And this weekend's special interview on podcast 574 would be with Inder Lal. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Well, we have a race this weekend. I feel good when there's a race. And this one is aired live on the BBC.
España.
Yes, Barcelona, the winds.
Circuit de Catalunya.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Now we're getting some updates. We had the test at Mugello last week. Some showed up, some thought it was a waste of time, some thought it was great. But in the end, apparently right at the end of the test, McLaren tested what possibly could be an ugly nose, a high nose.
Oh, one of the step noses?
Well, I don't know if it's going to have a step nose, but to bring it higher, it would have to have a step nose.
But that would be the step on the wrong side, though.
I don't think so. But it's going to be interesting. I've always been a fan of the high nose Benettons of the 90s and what have you. If there wasn't a step on the Ferrari, it would probably be a good-looking car because I like the high nose. And McLaren is trying to figure out what happened after Australia when they looked like they possibly could be dominating the field. But everything is so tight that every little nuance is important.
Every erg of energy saved by the aerodynamics.
Absolutely. And Martin Whitmarsh came out and says that the new high nose designed, trialed in the final minutes of Mugello for sneakiness. He says, quote, "We got a lot of feedback from Mugello, so we have the data to set it up and can find the performance on track. Classically, of course, you are looking for lower drag and higher downforce, but we are aware that nowadays incremental improvements are generally modest. In the case of the nose and front wing, the attachment pylons are quite different, and there are other subtle differences.
You are like the hole that runs through the downspout.
perhaps. You are managing the airflow that is enjoyed by the rest of the car. Nowadays, it's quite critical part of the car. You are looking to find very small improvements, like I said, nuances practically, and I think it's wonderful. I had a feeling that nose would change eventually. I just thought it would happen sooner than later, but this is only the fifth race.
Yeah, and we're basically back in Europe, which is traditionally kind of the first upgrade packages for most of the teams because that's where they're based. Easier to put them together, and also we've also had that big break since China. Bahrain. And so, there's been time to basically, okay, here's what we've got so far. Take a week, figure it out, and then 2 weeks to put together the pieces. Slap one together in a week and throw it on for that test.
And we'll see what happens. The other side of the coin is McLaren had another problem that they had to work on, and that was pit stops.
Yeah.
So you could imagine there's a lot of pressure on the boys in the pit box.
In the mechanics.
In this race.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, though. You got to think about this is that, you know, you've got to find a guy who's highly trained at wrenching on a car, who's also probably a pretty decent athlete.
You have to be a pretty good athlete.
To actually sling tires and run an air gun. And so it's very interesting.
And do it in 3 seconds.
Exactly.
No, it's going to be interesting. All eyes will be watching McLaren to see if they goof one up. So, and that's going to add a little bit of pressure. So I assume they're probably going to have a little yoga mixed with a little paella and some gazpacho to keep them calm yet alert.
Yeah, and everybody get a nice shot of Tillman's before they...
Correct. Whit Marsh talking about the pit stops. He says, the team did launch an investigation following the race after the two botched pit stops on Lewis Hamilton. We've looked at what we're doing. We've made some changes to the team and the process, and we'll see them on Sunday in Barcelona. So I'll be looking at every little thing in slow.
Yeah, they might be just, you know, maybe flip-flopping some personnel. You know, maybe the right rear guy now goes to the left. And you know,
it's possible.
Rotate their tires the staff around.
I would think there's probably a lot of cross-training.
Oh, yeah.
So anybody could shift to any position.
Yeah.
Because it would be foolish not to.
Yeah, especially in a pit lane where, you know, you could easily end up with a guy down for literally hundreds of different reasons. I'm sure that a lot of it, you know, they look back and taped. You know, at least one of those stops was an issue with a nut.
We had the nut. So, we had the titanium spindles. So aluminum nuts. We might have something stronger than aluminum this week.
You know, actually, you know, if anything, McLaren ought to be happy that, you know, they didn't release a car with a loose tire.
That's true. Talk to Schumacher about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there you have it. And now that we're going to Spain, this is Fernando Alonso country.
Yes. There will be lots of light blue flags in the
groupies, the fans, the Spanish press. All very, very exciting for Fernando.
Definitely not a distraction to him either. He always seems to step up to the challenge in Spain.
Well, he is Spanish, and the added pressure from Ferrari. They were at Mugello. They've got some new components on the car. We talked about the rear end now being a copy of the Sauber or the Ferrauber. They've got some more little toys to put on the car. And Fernando Alonso is pretty happy that there could possibly be a challenge for the top step. Fernando says, we will be counting on making a step forward, but we won't know until Saturday if we have, and if so, how big the step is. The updates to the F2012, some of which we tested in Mugello last week, will try out on Friday and in free practice. It's not the case that we are not on pole in Barcelona, then it's the end of the world. The important thing is to make progress reducing the gap. First this weekend, then again in Monaco, and after that in Montreal, Valencia, and Silverstone.
Yeah, that's what they really need to do, is just get back in the fight. Right now, they're kind of, you know, back there with Sauber and a lot of the other midfielders and not really being competitive.
Well, not only that, but now you have Lotus F1 and Kimi Raikkonen and Romain Grosjean nipping at your heels.
Yeah, well, basically looking really good in the points right now.
Yeah. Now, Lotus F1, they've said that they don't have any upgrades. That's what they're admitting to.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure there are tweaks that they've made. That, you know, they probably had a Spain package.
They would have. They were at Mugello. Romain Grosjean was there. You have to do some tweaks.
Yeah.
Development is everything in this business.
And I'm sure that they already had a Spain. Maybe what it is they already had a Spain package put together that was upgrades that they just, you know, made a couple looks at Mugello. And theoretically, it's not truly an upgrade because it was already in place before.
Well, Kimi Raikkonen's come out and saying, I didn't really need to go to Mugello. I know Mugello. We don't race there. Stinko, I don't need to be practicing. I'm here to race and win races. And he plans to be on the podium in Barcelona. And I'm looking forward to that machismo-ness.
Yeah, and for him, length of the season, first season back, probably makes more sense for him to take the 3 weeks off.
I guarantee Luca di Montezemolo, by the way, is going to be there with his friend Fernando. They could be going over to the Amber Club.
And some spare televisions.
Exactly, spare televisions to throw to the people. But he's putting a lot of pressure on Ferrari to to get their act together. He says, quote, "I've just spent a long while with our technicians and a big stick, and they are confident, but we need to see what the others have done."
Well, he's got to be, you know, a little irritated. They came within literally a pit stop of winning the championship 2 years ago and have basically just kind of careened out of control ever since.
Not only that, but they hired Fernando Alonso, and Fernando Alonso was promised a great car, great team, and he is yet
to win
the championship.
Yeah, that first season he was really close, but the team lost it.
Well, Montezemolo also adds, "I was left disappointed with the way we started the season. I didn't expect it from our technicians and our data. I was given the impression of a completely different situation." So, yeah.
Yeah. Tifosi, don't throw the eggs at me.
Yeah. No, big stuff. Schumacher has come out still attacking Pirelli. I would have by now thought that they would have talked to him and told him to calm down, but he's free to go out there and spew.
He shouldn't be spewing at Pirelli. He should go bitch and moan at Bridgestone for leaving.
Well,
you know,
he could do that if
he wants to. Knowing that, to me, it's kind of a futile whine in that they're not going away, Michael.
The teams voted for this recipe, basically.
Yeah, and deal with it.
Yeah. Michael Schumacher says, quote, "I just think that they're playing on a much too big effect because they are so peaky and so special that they don't put our cars and ourselves to the limit. We drive like on raw eggs, and I don't want to stress the tires at all. Otherwise, you just overdo it, and you go nowhere. We have luckily got one win under our belt," he said, reflecting on the campaign. "I was a bit unlucky in that race, as we could have gotten a 1-2. But, yeah, he's not happy with these Pirellis. Because I think the problem is he's got so much past with some great racing for sure. And all that has to be toned down and managed like you're walking on eggs with these tires.
And he's used to basically being able to run the tires into the ground because he spent so many years where the tires were engineered for the specific track, for his car, for his race. It's got to be kind of a challenge because, you know, I'm sure those Bridgestones, that you know, the special Bridgestones were set up to run for, you know, 25 laps and basically provide the same performance for all 25 laps no matter what.
No, I agree. Not only that, but I think an older driver, it's harder for an older driver to adapt and acclimate to these new scenarios in Formula One.
Definitely going to be a different kind of challenge, and it's not, especially considering, you know, again, the majority of his career before he came back, it was one tire per. You know, there was no funky two tire formula stuff to try to spice stuff up. You know, you had the two different, you know, competing tire companies, which I personally liked better. Yeah, it got to be a challenge because it's not what he came up with. It's not what he, you know, won his championships doing, and he really hasn't gotten to grips with it ever since it came into being.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when he was driving on Goodyears, the tires would degrade, but it was just nothing like this. Not on. I do like the show, but if they went with a tire that degraded just a little bit less, I'd still be pretty happy.
I would like to see the tires not drop off quite so far.
Like Kimi Raikkonen?
When they go off, you know.
Dropping 14 places.
Yeah, that it's pretty to critical. Me, that's kind of drastic. The tire goes that far off when it's done. And that seems to me just a little bit.
It's a little unfair.
Too much.
Yeah, I agree with you. Also,
there should be, you know, a little bit longer, you know, like another band underneath the prime stuff that keeps you mildly competitive until you get down to the radials.
Yes. Now, it's pretty brutal. We'll see what happens in Barcelona. It's going to be fun. Fernando Alonso, he was even talking about Gilles Villeneuve. Of course, this May 8th, it was Gilles Villeneuve's departure from Formula One permanently. Lots of talk about it on all the F1 sites. A lot of great photographs. He's off. He's back again. And Fernando was talking about how drivers today don't have the respect amongst each other like they did back in the vintage days. And I think he's right. He says, unfortunately, these days we no longer see this sort of fight. And he's talking about Arnoux and Gilles at Dijon in 1979. Because there are more difficulties to deal with. The cars are now dominated by aerodynamics. And those sorts of passing moves are no longer possible. On top of that, there was definitely more respect than there is now between drivers. Partly because they knew that. In those cars, they were risking their lives. I don't want to say that today things are done incorrectly, but I believe there is not that mutual respect, at least not from everyone, that there was back then. It's a problem that goes back a long way to the junior categories, perhaps, and I think the time has come to try and get the respect back, Stephen.
But I think a lot of it, too, comes down to the amount of... there's so much more money in the sport now than there was back in Villeneuve's day. And that's another reason you had the mutual respect between them, is because most of them weren't making all that much money. And there was also, it's a really good way to, kill yourself.
It was
driving
back
Formula
then.
One cars.
Even back, especially in the 70s and 80s, still very dangerous, brutal. But still, when you look at Dijon 79, pretty exciting stuff. I think we're having some pretty good seasons right now.
Yeah, this season so far has been very exciting. Been a lot more interesting. I can understand where Fernando's point is with the respect. And part of that is just the fact that almost to a degree, I think coming up through the junior formula now, they're not really taught like they once were. There really wasn't that long trek to Formula One that there is now.
And you hear that actually when you interview some of these young drivers in the junior formulas. I mean, they're already articulate. They know that they're in for it for millions of dollars. They're ready to plug their sponsors. It's a much more sophisticated young person that's managed by a number of people.
Right.
You don't hear about, these people aren't hawking or mortgaging homes anymore. Like Gilles Villeneuve or the Mansells used to do to get to the race.
And that's another good point in that their time is so spoken for. It's not like it was back in the days, like in the 70s and 80s, where after the race, a lot of these guys would go off and have dinner together.
Yeah, and drink.
Most of these guys...
And smoke.
Exactly. And now most of these guys are basically off from the track to a plane to their Monday morning sponsorship deal.
And their yoga classes and their green salad classes. And everything else, and their physios. It's a completely different world. But I also think Fernando might have been speaking because Nico Rosberg pushed him off the track in Bahrain, and he was still bitter about that. But I don't know.
Sergio Perez actually pressuring him in Malaysia.
And on the other hand, we see Fernando has great friendships with Mark Webber. He hangs around. He talks to a lot of people.
Yeah. I think there's still respect. It's just it's a different kind of respect.
It is a different kind of respect. It's called cash.
Yeah,
large amounts of it.
Anyway, large piles.
We've got a fantastic Motorsports Mondial coming up. We also have the interview with Felix Sorales, F3 driver. So it's going to be fascinating. British F3 drivers are the ones to watch right now.
They seem to be the ones that are moving up.
They are moving up. I love it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message from Bassino.com.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charon region, sipping on Cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charon. Opening in June 2012, Bassino offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassino is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassino.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. Two in a row for Stoner, first in 2 decades for BMW, and very pleased to report a friend of F1 Weekly is leading the World Series by Renault by winning on his debut weekend. Very impressive. You know, our long-term goal was to have friends in Formula One, and I think something will happen next year.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed that he didn't take victory lap waving the large F1 Weekly flag.
Well, you mean the one that we have here in the corner of the studio?
Exactly.
Bernie has attorneys at every track. Yeah. The moment he sees the word F1, you're getting a call from some Chattanooga-based Tennessee.
I have La Familia at each track.
Yeah, that's good. And in the goodie bag, you have already mentioned, we have an interview with Felix Herales, a young man from Puerto Rico doing well in the British Formula 3. And Mr. Brazier and I met him at the Alton Park race. He's an opener last month. That's where this conversation took place. His papa used to be very big in powerboat racing. But we shall start with racing on two wheels from Estoril near Cascais. I know you spent time in Spain. Have you ever been to Portugal?
I have, Portugal.
Really?
Yeah. Lisboa? In Portugal for 3 months, waiting for my boat.
Oh, wow.
That was, we left from Lisboa.
So were you the one who discovered, like, Cape Verde and Sao Tome Island?
Correct.
Wow.
That was me.
Surprised I've never seen you on a stamp.
Well, I'm on a few stamps, but...
Well, I'm talking about the food stamps.
Okay, dang.
Postage stamps. Anyway, Casey Stoner started from pole position, his first of the season, and recorded his second successive victory of the season. Jorge Lorenzo, man from Mallorca, came close to challenge for the lead, but had to settle again for second. I really enjoy MotoGP races.
I know you
very
do.
Close competition.
I just love that whole.
Yeah, and there are, you know, there's Ducati, Honda, Yamaha.
All your favorites.
Yes, exactly. The Yamaha rider, which would be Lorenzo, has now lost the championship lead to Honda rider, Mr. Stoner. And Stoner's teammate Danny Pedrosa was third. Danny Pedrosa, you know, because of him, Repsol, this big Spanish oil company, who don't have many friends in Argentina now, they were pushing him, and that's what caused Nicky Hayden to leave Honda. But he has been totally overpowered by Jorge Lorenzo and Stoner, and let's see what happens in the next year, few years to come. Valentino Rossi was 7th for Ducati, and Ben Spies on a Yamaha was the best placed American rider. Hayden was 11th for Ducati, and Colin Edwards from Texas, they call him the Texas Tornado, I believe.
Fascinating.
Yes, did not start following his accident in Cali, courtesy of your homeboy, Randy DiPugnier. You know, our longtime listener, Dr. Miguel, was spotted in the pit lane on Saturday.
Our esteemed colleague?
Yes, and I have a feeling that he was there trying to do some diagnosis on Adriana Stoner, who, as you all know, is very fair dinkum on the eyes. Have you ever seen her, Casey
yes.
Stoner's wife?
That's what I usually stare at her instead of Stoner.
Well, that goes without saying. You look at Stoner on the last lap when he's taking the win.
Correct.
So a couple of other riders have some very nice company, I have to say.
I wonder why.
Yeah, me too. It's called Big Bucks. Life in the fast lane, cameras on you. So that's the way it is.
Yeah, we can't even get decent maids here.
Really? I
thought we only had janitors.
Why don't you apply for a job at IMF?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, being French might help, you know.
That's true. Thank you. Merci beaucoup, monsieur.
Yeah, you will have maids in 5-star hotels. Okay, WSBK, World Superbikes, they were at Monza, and race one was cancelled shortly after the start due to monsoon rain. Second race was also stopped short of full distance, but we have a winner on Kawasaki, Tom Sykes, and Leon Haslam was second for BMW, also known as BMW. Next, we go to Aragon near Alcañiz in neighboring Viva España for World Series by Renault. This was the, of course, season opening races. The race in the main series, which is Formula Renault 3.5, was won by Nick Jalali of England. Real big surprise. Jules Bianchi was second, but was later disqualified on a technicality, which promoted Kevin Magnussen into second and our friend Robin Vriens from Netherlands to third. Several cars were taken out on the opening lap, including Alexander Rossi of Northern California. Second race saw Vriens making his debut in the series, along with Kevin Magnussen, with Fortec Motorsports win the race with authority, and with it take the lead in the championship. And this is what he had to say after the win.
I had a good start position, P3. It was much better than yesterday, P12, for some problems. I had not a good start, fell back to P4. Then I waited a couple of laps to get all settled. Then I started pushing, overtook Sam. Little luck that Sorensen had an issue, I don't know what he was. A bit sad, because we had the same pace. I want to see that battle, because now... Anyway, I won the race, and I have to thank the team a lot, because the car was brilliant.
This kid has now won 2 championships in the past 2 years, and it will not be a surprise if he's part of some F1 team's young driver program before the season is over. I tell you what, man, if he can pull off a championship success in World Series by Renault in first year, that's going to be A, very impressive, and secondly, it's not going to be good for second and third year drivers. His manager is Werner Heinz, who used to manage Nick Heidfeld also. And he manages other sports people also, apart from motor racing. Our old friend Sam Bird was second. Arthur Peak, he is the brother of Charles Peak in Formula 1. You know, it's amazing Charles Peak is in Formula 1, and you hardly even hear his name just because of the equipment he has.
Well, he's at the back.
Yeah.
Not too many people pay too much attention at that. But
he's not at the very back, which also means you're kind of in limbo.
I don't know. HRT is going to be in Spain, so I think they're going to be pumped up.
You know, HRT, since they're always looking for pay driver, they should have a slogan, HRT, only thing missing is you. The team is hurting all the time, both in performance and financially, and they're looking for somebody with cash. Dineros.
Pesetas?
Yeah, and you know, and they have test driver who can really bring this team to the forefront. Senora Maria de Viota.
Gracias.
Yeah, and Susie Wolf is going to do wonders for Williams too. I'm sure of that. What say you?
I'm looking forward to her.
Yeah,
she's good.
Oh yeah, that they are. Okay, did I say Kevin Corius was fourth and Rossi completed the top five? I guess
something
I've just
like that.
Done that. Yeah, Kevin Corius, very talented from Estonia, and Rossi, of course. And talking of Rossi, he will be doing the first Friday practice with Caterham.
Alexander Rossi,
that is correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that is good for him, and I'm happy for him, and it's also for his family.
Well, he's the only American out there.
And he's also very good, you know. It's not just showing up a face, you know, hey, I'm American, man.
I got some cash.
Yeah, no, the guy, kid can make it and succeed.
It's called if good he parenting.
If he has the right support. Okay, now we move to the second tier of World Series by Renault events. And all races are free, folks. So if you're in Europe and there's a World Series by Renault, just go on World Series by Renault website and download a free ticket, and there you are. Okay, so what happened? The Formula Renault Euro Cup also started. And the winner was Ruski, Red Bull driver Daniel Kvyat. He won the opening race over young Dutch talent Nick de Vries. Nick de Vries is the kid who was the young. He's on the Sebastian Vettel program in karting, youngest karting world champion, then youngest double world karting champion, which happened in the last 2 years. Belgian Stoffel Vandoorne was third, and he drives for our friends from Germany, the Josef Kaufmann Racing Team. Mr. Kvyat, now we call him the Russian Rocket, also won the second race over Colombian Oscar Tunjo, and Norman Natho of Francia was third. And Kvyat, you know, he's in his second year, and if he wins the championship, then I think Dr. Marco will be happy with him. Maybe sponsor him in a MiG-23 race also. You know what a MiG-23 is, right?
I understand.
Cool. Okay, now we go to DTM from Lausitzring in only the second start. This was very impressive. Bruno Spengler has given BMW their first win upon returning to the series after 20 years. Mercedes driver Gary Paffett put a lot of pressure on the French-Canadian, but had to settle for second. Third was another BMW driven by a Brazilian, Augusto Farfus. And Augusto Farfus has been with BMW for quite a while. Your friend Ralf Schumacher was 10th, his friend DC was 12th, and Joey Henn, the only American in DTM, he's from Sacramento area, he was 14th in his BMW. So a very good career move, and I'm glad BMW has taken him to. He was pretty quick, so that's always good. World Touring Cars Championship, they were at the Hungaroring, the beautiful Formula One venue behind the Iron Curtain. Chevy 123 in race one with Ivan Muller, who was from your land, winning over Rob Huff and Alain Menu. Menu is from Switzerland. In race two, local Magyar Norbert Mikulis was the winner in his BMW, and the crowd went very wild and ballistic. Alain Menu was second, and Mehdi Benani of Morocco was third. Now we come to your favorite series. They were at Talladega. Brad Keselowski wins for Mr. Penske. First Dodge victory at the track in 36 years. Toyota of Kyle Busch was second. Now we come to some other chatter heard around the racing world. You know, we're in May. Indy 500 is coming up. I love the qualifying day, and I love the race itself. So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Was Talladega as exciting as I think it was?
Yeah, I love the super speedways.
Now, I heard Busch had no sponsorship on his car.
Kyle Busch?
Yes.
No, Kurt Busch.
Kurt Busch, and he painted his car in the Ricky Bobby theme. The Cougars?
Yeah.
With the Cougar in the back?
Yes.
I thought it was pretty funny stuff.
Yeah, it is.
You know. I mean, I like this guy. He's got his sense of humor. And if Ricky Bobby and Jean Gérard is brought up at Talladega, I'm a fan.
Yeah, what you need is someone else to lose your sponsorship and paint their car like in a near Perrier.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you, once you are released from your contract from Razor Penske, you need a sense of humor.
You do.
Or you need a goatee like Paul Tracy.
I like Paul Tracy.
Me too. Yeah, Paul
anyway,
Tracy.
Anyway, sorry that I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. Yeah, intelligentsia is always appreciated in motorsports.
I understand.
Okay, Jay Penske, son of you-know-who, is suing Lotus over their Indy engine fiasco. And I think this Lotus empire is going to be crumbling very soon.
It's a disaster.
What has happened, Proton, the parent company, has sold the Lotus group to some other, you know, arm of the Malaysian government or whatever. And I think pretty soon people are going to be saying, hey, what's going on here?
Well, where's my engines? Yeah. Where's my chassis?
Yeah, where is my profit? And, you know, why am I getting sued by a guy for $200,000 of home renovation done at your home, big home we bought for you in England? You know, this is also going on. So this was totally out of control. Yeah, this is what happens when you have a lot of money in your country through oil or whatever resource is, and you don't have a culture of a certain sport, be it motorsports, and you want to buy success with money, sooner or later you're going to run into these problems. I mean, look at the Chinese Grand Prix, the Turkish Grand Prix, and look at the wonderful local interest we have in UAE in motorsports. But, you know, money talks.
Yeah, I know, but the sad part is a great name like Lotus is just being dragged through some pretty pathetic areas.
You know, in the best of financial times, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, a lot of people have taken, big companies have taken stab. I mean, look at Honda when they came out with NSX. I mean, from all I've heard, it's a fantastic vehicle. But did it really put a dent in the sales of Ferrari? It's the heritage, it's the pedigree that you would say, it's the tradition. You know, it's when you look at the star of Mercedes, I mean, they've been winning races 100 years ago. It has a very, very strong background, very historical importance in the world of motoring. They're just not going to disappear right away. You know, they're not AMC Pacer. You know what I'm saying? And to do all this thing, try to take a stab at Porsche and Ferrari and Maserati in one go in the financial times we are in, I mean, it's just not going to work. no matter how good of a salesman you are, which, you know, Danny Bahar has done a very good job for himself. The guy was head of Red Bull marketing program. He was head of Ferrari marketing program. So, you know, he's done very well, and I respect that. But you just can't do everything. Anyhow, we talked about Jay Penske. Jean Alesi, he has the new motivation. He's going to be coming at race at Indy this year. And he's also a brand ambassador for Lotus. I'm not sure. And of course, you know, this had to happen at Talladega. Miss Danica Patrick, remember that great race car driver?
One of my favorites.
Yeah, she was involved in a little post-race argy-bargy with Sam Hornish in the nationwide race at Talladega. What happened? If you look at it, race is coming to an end, and looks like Sam Hornish pretty much stuffed her into the wall. So they crossed the finish line, and then she goes up to him and did what you would expect from Kyle Busch, you know, or a Robbie Gordon.
I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, but then this guy, Sam Hornish, said the reason he went towards the wall, he had a flat right tire, and which Miss Patrick did not know. But, you know.
But at least we know now that...
But she jumped to the conclusion that he meant to do it.
Oh, yeah, she's had issues with everybody.
Danica Patrick has testicles.
Oh, that's nice. That's good to hear.
Dan Patrick.
Okay. Now we move on to a moment in motorsport history. Today's segment is called Off the Radar, Circuit and Countries which are no longer holding F1 races, and the final winner each race. And of course, due to time consideration, we cannot cover all the final races. So here is a sampling. A is for Argentina, land that produced Fangio, Gonzalez, and Reutemann. Plans are underway to bring Formula Uno back to Argentina in the city of Mar del Plata, which is south of Buenos Aires, also known as Buenos Aires in Bordeaux. Till then, the 1998 race will remain the last GP under the Argentine skies. DC was on pole, sharing the front row with his very fast friend, Michael Schumacher. The Red Baron went on to win the race after some argy-bargy with DC. Mika Hakkinen was second, and Eddie Irvine third, also in a Ferrari. Remember Eddie Irvine in Ferrari?
I loved Eddie Irvine in Ferrari.
Once they asked him about testing for Ferrari, you know what he said? He goes, I have somebody who does the testing for the team. So pretty interesting. Brazil and Jacarepaguá circuit in Rio. In 1989, the last GP at this circuit saw first win for Il Leone in his first drive for Ferrari. This race I remember very well watching. The race was also first win for car with semi-automatic gearbox, and thanks to R. Nige and John Barnard. From Brazil, we go to Brands Hatch in beautiful English countryside. And if anybody is in London for a short time, I would highly recommend a visit to this track. Beautiful. It's just like Laguna Seca.
Green.
Lush green and very, very nice. And the fish and chips are extremely delicious. Okay, so the final British Grand Prix to be held here was 1986. Williams Honda started from the front row with victory going to Mansell over pole sitter and prankster Senor Nelson Piquet. TV commentator Martin Brundle was fifth in his Tyrrell. You know, it's nice to see if you're looking at, like, a few days ago I was reading a Autosport magazine from 2000, and, you know, when you look at races, you see names of guys who are very big now in very small series. So I always enjoy that, looking at some 10, 20 years old race results and see what's going on. One day I was looking at the FIA CIK, which is the karting championship, many years ago, you know, result from several years ago, and one of the races was like fourth or fifth. It says K. Matthias Raikkonen. So, and now he's a pretty big guy.
You think?
Are you surprised at the pace he's showing right now?
No. I'm surprised by the Lotus having pace.
No, it's very true. And frankly, I'm very happy for Romain Grosjean.
Me too.
Because I always thought he was a very good driver based on results. And I feel the same about Nico Hülkenberg. But let's see how he does throughout the season.
If the package looks good, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And talking of Brands Hatch, on a sad note, Swiss F1 driver Joe Siffert was killed there, and some years ago in the first season, I believe it was the first season of F2, Henry Surtees was also killed in an accident there. North of the border, Canada way, Circuit Gilles Villeneuve on a man-made island is now a very popular stop. 1977, the final Canadian Grand Prix took place at the Mossport Circuit. The race was won by Jody Scheckter in a Wolf. Mr. Walter Wolf, an Austrian-born Canadian, made his money in the oil business. Mossport is the track where German driver Manfred Winkelhock was killed in a sports car race in 1985. And you know, talking of Gilles Villeneuve, you talked about it a little bit earlier. It's nice, just goes to show how popular he was, despite being in the sport for like only 5 or 6 years. Now we go to your fantasy land, Francia, the birthplace of Grand Prix racing, when Felipe Massa was the winner over teammate Raikkonen. The Finn was leading, but then a right-hand side exhaust pipe broke and he lost some engine power. Third was Jarno Trulli in a Toyota. More importantly, and this was another interesting thing that I noticed when I was looking at this result, someone finished 7th and collected his first F1 championship points. Who can it be now? The one and only trucker, Nelson Piquet Jr. I am really, really surprised that truck racing in NASCAR is at least a million or two. It has to be, you know. That he has not tried to do Indy 500 or some road races in India. I think he will do good. But what do you think?
I am surprised too, but the problem is sponsorship. Usually his father could scrape up some money from Brazil, but no.
You know, talking of sponsorship, past weekend, I was just, you know, looking at some different website, this and that. Anyway, I caught a game in the Brazilian Football League, okay, a live game going on, and just wanted to see for 5-10 minutes. It was all in Portuguese, and during the ads, there was an ad from Pirelli Pneus, Piquet Pirelli, so apparently he has a chain of Pirelli tire stores also. You know, he has a company that does provide satellite tracking for the trucking industry, and that is a cash cow for him. Okay, now after this French Grand Prix, Felipe Massa had a 10-point lead over Hamilton, who was not even in the top three in the championship at that time. And we all know what happened in the season finale. Timo Glock kept me from eating a crow. That was probably the most incredible final lap I've ever seen in
a lot of Formula. Tears.
It was just
the expression on Massa's father.
Oh yeah, and of course, you know how both camps were jumping with joy.
Champion for all of 15 seconds.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, you know, I still watch it in different languages, and on YouTube, German, Portuguese, and it's very, very intense, very impressive. Now we come to the San Marino Grand Prix at Imola. Both names will be linked with the tragic events of the 1994 race weekend. Time moved on, and so did the race, surviving till 2006, when Michael Schumacher returned the favor from previous year to Fernando Alonso. Montoya was third in this race for McLaren. And I was at this race in 2004 when Jenson Button scored his first pole position. The track is worth a visit, especially the Aqua Minerale section in Alta Variante, which is where I watched the race from, and it's not too far from Bologna, which is not too far from Modena Maranello. So it's very nice. From San Marino to South Africa, we go to the final race held there in 1993 in the halcyon days of Williams Renault. Prost was the winner over ex-teammate and good friend Ayrton Senna. Michael Schumacher, Michael Andretti, and Luca Badoer all failed to finish the race. And how different their careers have gone from 1993, all failing to finish in the South African Grand Prix, which was the season opener. We all know where Michael Schumacher is. We all know where Michael Andretti is. And Mrs. Badoer is the only person who knows where Luca is. Even his namesake is not interested in him. That was really bad, you know. Classic case of be careful what you wish for. Just might come true. You know, Fisico left his Force India drive to drive for Ferrari, and just didn't work out for both of them. And this race, by the way, the 1993 South African Grand Prix, saw the debut of Sauber team in Formula One, and J.J. Leto, now singing the blues in a Finnish prison, gave the team a top five finish. So there you have a little histoire of some of the final races in different places of the world. And if I may ask, are you going to the final race in Austin, Texas?
Of course. All F1 Weekly staff have to go. It's mandatory.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, this is my goal. I was talking to a friend of mine. He's in a different state. He might go there, and he asked me if I'm going. So my thing is, I know exactly where I'll be on November 10th, which will be D.C. area. And that's my plan is this. If I'm in the country, then I'll go for sure. But if I'm overseas, then I won't be able to go.
It's hard to go if you're in another country.
Yeah, another country would be about like 12,000 miles away. So your favorite place, Karachi.
That is my
the other side of the planet.
yeah. So, but, you know, I mean, depending on how things go, and I really want to go there for like at least 2 weeks, so maybe I'll delay and go in December, I'm not sure. But I've decided that if I'm in the U.S., I'm heading to Texas. It's going to be fun. The track looks very beautiful. The first, you know, the run-up to the first turn is a little bit rising, you know, elevation change, and then it turns left, and it really reminds me of the old Österreichring. It was like that real steep climb, and then they used to turn right. So, well, I look forward to it. I hope it happens. It'll be great. And then next year we'll have dos Formula Uno carreras in America.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I heard that New Jersey was not on track for actually making it in 2013.
No, you heard it from Bernie Ecclestone, right?
Well, that was the...
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, there was an interview. There was some sort of an interview with the gentleman who's in charge on Speed TV, and looks like it's going to happen. So we'll see. Shall we move on to the interview with Felix Cerales?
Absolutely.
Okay, Felix Cerales is a young man from the island of Puerto Rico, from a town called Ponce, and he did some karting in the U.S., and then he won this scholarship to go and race, which Jeremy Shaw, the English journalist who's been here for a long time, he organizes, and I think a lot of people when they were young, like Jimmy Vassar, Brian Herter, they also went on this scholarship to race in England, and he has already won a race in British F3, so that's very good. Young kid, and I wish him all the best and would like to thank him for his time. So please enjoy the conversation with Felix Cerales.
Okay, folks, I'm here with a young gentleman from Ponce, Puerto Rico, Felix Reyes. Felix, good to meet you. How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm very happy with the result we had. The first race was quite a bit of a full of accidents in the beginning, and I unfortunately got spun around, but ended up coming from the back and still finishing second, so quite happy with the result.
This is your first season in Formula 3. What are your expectations?
Well, the way it's going now, I'm still taking it as a learning curve. It's too early to decide, but really it's just to get as much points and finish maybe inside the top five. But we'll see at the end of the season if I can, you know, win races and finish more on the podium, and we'll see.
What's the main difference between a Formula 3 car and a Formula Renault car, which you drove last year?
The downforce is pretty much what defines the F3 car, but also it's very more professional and more competitive and a lot more aggressive.
You find it drivers here less forgiving?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's no room for error, and you can't give any space because they'll dive bomb and probably take you out as well.
Now, early this year, you were in New Zealand doing the Toyota Racing Series. How was that experience?
It was very good. I think it was a good warm-up before this F3 season because there was a lot of competitive drivers from many championships and different parts of the world. So I think it was a learning curve as well, and I learned a lot, and I think I improved a lot in my driving over there because everything was so quick and there was no breaks to relax. It was all 5 weeks in a row, so I think it went really well, and I think I might be going next year again.
How many sheep in New Zealand?
Sheep? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
Okay. Now, what was the highlight of your time in 15 races that you did in 5 weeks?
Well, definitely, I think winning one of the races and obviously, I think showing that I was competitive enough, finishing in the podium and finishing P1 in practice as well.
And your thoughts on the tracks in New Zealand, especially my favorite, Taupo?
What is my favorite track?
Yeah.
I would say maybe Invercargill. is the first track, and maybe Hampton Downs is the second favorite track.
How about Taupo?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, Taupo is quite good as well, yeah.
Now tell us a little bit about your season last year in Formula Renault, please.
It was my first year of racing cars. It was very hard. I learned a lot. And, you know, it was very competitive in the Euro Cup. There was 38 cars, so, you know, I started out really well. But then as I got to different tracks that I didn't know, I was just didn't have the pace. But I think it went really well for my first year.
Talk about new tracks, learning new tracks. When a driver like you goes to a new track, how long it takes to feel comfortable with the track?
I would say maybe one session, I think, maybe 20 laps. If you feel comfortable and you've done simulator work, I think maybe straight away you can just feel comfortable and find the limit.
Now, racing simulators is becoming more and more popular, even in Formula One. Is that really very close to what the real action is?
I think it's these days the simulators are getting more realistic and more useful for many drivers from, I think, any championship. It's quite helpful, and it can not only acclimatize you with the track, I think it can improve your driving and improve technique.
Now I understand your dad was doing racing on water. Why did you not follow his line?
Well,
or his wake?
Yeah, I mean, when he was racing boats, he actually put me in a go-kart, and I think I just fell in love with racing on the road. But I don't know really why I didn't follow his footsteps. I think it was just at the moment that was what I had in front of me, and I just enjoyed it.
Now, how popular is motorsports in Puerto Rico? Tell me a little bit about the racing scene then. Scene there. Do you have a lot of karting tracks there?
Before, when I used to race, maybe when I was 10 years old, there was at least 3 tracks. But then after the economy fell, there's only about two tracks left, and many drivers stopped racing because there's no money and there's really a little few cars and actual racing going on.
Now, is the Puerto Rican media following your success with a lot of interest?
Yeah, actually, I think I get enough media time in Puerto Rico, but obviously, since I think Puerto Rico is not very well known with racing, we're not known for motorsports. I think one day maybe I should, you know, take over and maybe be the image of racing from Puerto Rico.
Yeah, no, that would be great. Now, you did some karting in the U.S., mainland U.S. Tell us a little bit about your karting time, please.
And I only did a few races, really. At that time, I was a bit, you know, immature. I didn't have the good.
Are you fully immature now?
Yeah, I think I'm better now. But I did a few races in America, but mostly in Puerto Rico because obviously it was more expensive.
Now, if I may ask, why did you decide to go racing here in Europe and not do like Formula US 2000 or something in the US?
Well, it was all because of the Team USA scholarship. Once I won that, it gave me the opportunity to come over to Europe, and I really just fell in love with how competitive it is over here and how many drivers and just how really tough it is over here, and I just wanted to see how well I could do.
And during the racing season, are you based in Puerto Rico or somewhere in Europe?
No, I'm based here in England, in Northampton.
Have you developed a taste of fish and chips?
Yeah, well, I eat quite healthy, but I've had it once or twice at least.
Okay, great. You know, second race is about to start. I wish you all the best. Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? And we have listeners on your island also.
Okay, thank you very much.
Do you have a message for them?
Just thank
them about your website.
If you want to follow me, you could follow me on Facebook.com, Felix Juan Zorales Racing, or on Twitter, Felix Zorales. And my website is up at the moment, FelixZorales.com, and it'll be renovated soon. So just keep up to date, and, you know, thank you very much for, you know, giving me time in your webpage.
Thank you so much. Very nice talking to you.
Felix, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And Nasser, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up
We want to mention our Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email me at info@f1weekly.com. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.